The world we live in today is a very dark place sometimes. It seems like this society, we see it every day, it's deteriorating more and more as each day passes. And there's lots of things that can contribute to this deterioration and this darkness. You know, there's a lot of evil things out there. You know, we contend with this each and every day. You know, the stories we see on the news or we hear on the news and the radio, sometimes they're almost unbearable at the evil that is out there, that's in this world, and the things that the evil that portrays. You know, many people have a fascination with this darkness and with this dark side. It's intriguing for them to want to maybe go over to the dark side. You know, there's lots of movies and things along that line with the dark side. And it just so happens that the holiday there that the world is celebrating today has to do with this dark side. You know, many people out there don't really understand the background and what's behind the holiday they're celebrating today in Halloween. You know, it's just an opportunity for a lot of them to just to dress up and go to a party. You know, dress up in some type of costume. And it's humorous sometimes to watch people, you know, in some of the costumes that they dress up in, some of the things that they do to get ready for this celebration of darkness, if you will. You know, it's looked upon as totally okay. You know, I took my daughter to school yesterday morning and had breakfast with her, and as we're sitting there in the cafeteria, you know, all these various costumes, adults and children alike, are parading through the school. You know, and some of them were actually humorous to look at. You know, that somebody would actually go out of their house looking like that. But, you know, anyway, it's not a big deal to the world. You know, sometimes the more grotesque and the more horrific that you can look, the more the character that you're portraying, the better people like it and the more fun it is. You know, so back again, this fascination with the dark side. You know, people may mean nothing by what they do, but there is a question then I would ask. You know, who's behind this way of darkness? And there was a parody or a little skit on Saturday Night Live, and I'm not promoting that, but I did watch Saturday Night Live when I was younger. And there was a skit called The Church Lady. How many of you are familiar with that? So I'm not the only one that's been watching Saturday Night Live. Anyway, you know the phrase from The Church Lady. You know, could it be Satan? That's the answer to my question. You know, Satan is behind this way of darkness and this way of evil. And I was telling my wife that I was thinking about doing the little dance the church lady did, but she suggested that I stop it here, so I will. I don't want to embarrass her. But Satan is behind this way of darkness and this evil. You don't have to turn there yet, but we'll hit this scripture later. But 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4. And we know that Satan is the god of this world. You know, he's blinded the world. You know, they're blinded by the way of darkness, by this way of darkness. You know, they can't see the light, or they can't see God's way. So the title I have today for the sermon is Blinded by the Darkness. You know, Satan is the god of this world. He has control over this world, at least for now. And he's doing his best to deceive everyone in this world. You know, he wants them to follow his way. His way of evil and lawlessness. You know, he has the world blinded by this way of darkness. And Satan is our enemy. As Christians, he is our public enemy number one. You know, in order for you and I to fight this enemy and to overcome this enemy, we must know the enemy. You know, we see this in all the wars that are going on around the world. You know, the soldiers are fighting an enemy. Sometimes they don't know who the enemy is. But we must know the enemy if we're going to fight and overcome this enemy. And this is no ordinary enemy that we face either. This is very serious business for us. You know, our future, our eternal future is at stake. You know, we must not only face this enemy of ours, we must defeat the enemy. We must overcome Satan. And as in any war, it's important that we know the enemy if we're going to successfully engage that enemy and to defeat the enemy. So let's get to know our enemy. Let's get to know Satan. And that sounds a little bit weird. Maybe we're going to step a little bit to the dark side, but I don't mean that we should start trying to have a relationship with Satan. You know, we don't want that, and we don't want to open our minds to Satan. You know, but on the contrary, we have to be guarding against Satan and his influence. You know, it's not a matter of if Satan is going to come after you and me. It's a matter of when he comes after us. You know, and he will. Satan is coming after us. You and I have to be ready when he makes his assault on us. And to be prepared for and to withstand this assault, you know, we have to know something about him and how he works if we're going to combat him. And as we were coming over today, as we hit the traffic jam, you know, I looked over. We've had some other difficulties today getting ready for services. It seems like, you know, there's always something that gets in your way. You know, we were making the comment, you know, this is almost too much to bear sometimes, you know, with all getting ready for services, driving to services, and all that goes along with that. You know, and then we hit the traffic jam to add to it. And I made a comment to my wife, you know, this is Satan at work. And another point along that line is, you know, when I was, after everyone else had gone to bed last night, I was reading and studying over this. Everything was quiet in the house. And then all of a sudden, a broom and a dustpan we had just fell into the floor. And I'm not saying that that was, you know, has nothing to do with Satan. But it's just, you know, here I'm trying to concentrate last night. All of a sudden, I was startled, you know, by this noise. And then I couldn't help but start thinking, you know, Satan is going to try to stop us from, you know, successfully fighting him and so on. You know, but Satan is coming after all of us. And so how do you and I get to know Satan? If we're going to be able to combat him, how do we get to know him? So I want to encourage each of us here today that with the proper understanding of how Satan works, and with the right preparation, we can withstand these attacks that he brings at us. We can withstand the attacks of Satan. And more importantly, we can overcome those. We can beat Satan. We can win. You know, there are two aspects in this sermon today. The first one is I want to look at who Satan is and how he works. So we're going to get to know the enemy. We're going to get some insight into the mind and the character of Satan, and a look at how Satan came to be the being that he is. And then secondly, with the understanding then of how he works and who he is, we'll look at some ways that we can prepare ourselves to face this enemy and to be assured that we can withstand and overcome this powerful influence that he has. And we're going to find that you and I have a secret weapon in our battle with Satan. Actually, it's not really that much of a secret at all. But there is a weapon that we have, and we're going to see that later. There's a weapon that we have against Satan. So first of all then, let's look at who is Satan and how does he work. You know, there are several different names or terms that are used for Satan. You know, Satan is probably the most common one. Then there's the devil and the god of this world, the prince of darkness, the prince of the power of the air. And all of these names have some type of significant meaning or description of this enemy that we face. They tell us a little bit about his character, possibly. Now, a central message that the Bible has from the beginning to the end is that the devil is the enemy of all humanity. And as we discover what the Bible says about him, you know, we find him continually intent on harming mankind, waging war against human beings in every way imaginable. And we're going to skim the surface and hit a lot of things pretty rapidly, but if you want to get more in-depth information and read more on this, you can read the booklet the church has, Is There Really a Devil? You know, and I've borrowed some quotes and some points from that booklet, but we can't do that justice in the sermon today. So that book will kind of reinforce and build upon what we cover today. But Satan's goal or purpose is to disrupt the plan that God has to build a family relationship with mankind. You know, Satan obviously knows by now that, you know, that he cannot defeat God. You know, his past experience and encounters that he's had with God should reveal that fact to him. But however, Satan realizes that he can attack and he can influence and he can even defeat the other half of this equation of God's plan. And that's the human aspect of God's plan. Satan has a chance to influence and deceive mankind. And he's working really, really hard to make sure that humanity fails. And let's briefly look here at the names of Satan that we just went over. First one is Satan. It means adversary. You know, the very name Satan, which is used most commonly in the Bible for this evil being, helps reveal something about his malicious intent that he has. You know, God tends to call things what they are. You know, and Satan, it's a Hebrew noun meaning adversary. You know, the enemy or the opponent, the antagonist or the foe. You know, and the verb form of this noun means to accuse or to slander and to be an adversary. I mean, that's taken from the Anchor Bible Dictionary, but Satan is our adversary. The next term, the devil. You know, this other term the Bible uses to describe this being is also revealing. The devil is translated from the Greek word diabolos, the root from which we get such words as diabolic or diabolical, used to describe something that is wicked or sinister. Now, diabolos means also an accuser and a slanderer. You know, Satan is our accuser. He wants to slander us and he wants to damage our reputation. Another term is God of this world. As I mentioned, Satan, for now, has control and rulership over this world. You know, we're told in the Bible that, you know, Jesus was not of this world, and that God's kingdom at this time is not of this world. And Satan's rulership and control over this world will come to an end. You know, but he's going to wreak havoc until then. He's going to make the most of every opportunity that he has. And if he can't have this world, then he's going to try to destroy it and all the people that are in it. Then the prince of darkness and the prince of the power of the air. You know, Satan's way of evil and darkness is contrary to God's way of good. God's way represents light. Satan's way represents darkness. And though his devious techniques, and through these devious techniques, Satan tries to control and influence the minds of mankind in this world. And if you were to draw two columns on your paper and put God at the top of one and put Satan at the top of the other, under God you would have words such as good, while under Satan you've got evil. Under God you'd have love. Satan's way would be hate. God's way is wholesome family values. Satan's way is to pervert those family values. You know, we see that in the news a lot today. You know, the marriage relationship is getting further and further away from what God intended it to be. That's Satan's way. Perverse family values. God's way is caring. Satan's way would be unconcerned. God's way is the way of give. Satan's way is the way of get. You know, God's way is sharing. Satan's way is selfish. You look at God as the creator. Satan is the destroyer. So in order to understand more about who and what Satan is, let's lay out some characteristics. There are character traits that Satan might possess. And you could make a list of these, you know, on your own. If I were to ask, you know, for people to give us suggestions, you probably would have a lot of the same words that I'm going to have. But I'm sure there would be others as well. So the list that I've got is by no means all-inclusive. But these are some of the characteristics that describe this being, Satan, and how he works. You know, Satan is jealous. Satan is very jealous of all of us. You know, we have a chance and an opportunity for something that he can't have, and that's to be in God's family. Satan had his opportunity, and he blew it. Satan is deceitful. He's dishonest, and he's misleading in the way he comes after us and all of mankind. Satan is cunning. He's scheming. He uses trickery to get to people. Satan is a liar. And John 8:44 says that he is the father of lies. And Satan is prideful. Let's say that Satan is very proud, or was at one time very proud. And he's vindictive. He wants to cause hurt and anguish. And Satan is manipulative. He tries to control and influence by unfair or insidious means. And he's also very treacherous, very seductive, and very subtle in the way that he goes about it. And here's a good one that probably describes Satan. And I've cleaned it up a little bit. Ticked off. Satan is probably very ticked off, very angry, and very upset. Satan knows what his ultimate fate is. You know, he knows how the story's going to end. And I would say that it's safe to say he's not too happy about the way it's going to end. You know, he's probably very mad about that, very angry. And he's going to take that anger out on someone. Most likely it's going to be us. But Satan is going to take his anger out on anyone that he can. And especially those that are going to get to have what he can't have. You know, those individuals that have an opportunity to have what he can't have. You know, to be a member of God's family. You know, Satan would like nothing more to keep as many people out of God's kingdom and his family as possible. So he is very angry. And was Satan created this way from the beginning? No, he wasn't. But Satan was not always this way. So how did he get to this point? How did it come to this? What happened? I guess he can't use the excuse, the devil made me do it, but actually he probably can. Turn back to Ezekiel chapter 28. We'll get a little background information on this being that we now call and refer to as Satan. Back in Ezekiel chapter 28, God begins by discussing a human ruler. Now, then he shifts over to this spiritual power that's behind this earthly throne, this behind-the-scenes ruler who controls the kingdoms of this world, you know, the God of this world. You know, as the chapter opens up, you know, God is addressing this prince of Tyre. The entire coastal port city north of ancient Israel on the Mediterranean coast was famous as a trading center. And its rulers had grown haughty and presumptuous because of their wealth and their influence. I would say that pride entered into the picture here. When we see in verses 6 through 10 that God tells this ruler that because of this arrogance, his might and wealth would fail and he would be overthrown. But then we get to verse 12, and then God begins to address the king of Tyre rather than the prince. This individual would be the true ruler, the real power behind this throne. And verse 12 of Ezekiel 28 says, "Son of man, take up a lamentation for the king of Tyre and say to him, thus says the Lord God, you were the seal of perfection, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. You were in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was your covering, the sardius, topaz, diamond, beryl, onyx, and jasper, sapphire, turquoise, and emerald with gold. The workmanship of your timbrels and pipes was prepared for you on the day you were created." This description here seems to make clear that what he's talking about is not a physical human being. No mortal human being could accurately be described as the seal of perfection, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. This being was created. This being had also been in Eden, the garden of God. And other than Adam and Eve, no other people had been in the Eden. So verse 14 gives us a little more insight on the history of this being. Verse 14, "You were the anointed cherub who covers." What is a cherub who covers? In Hebrews chapter 8 and verse 5 tells us the tabernacle established by Moses, this portable sanctuary the Israelites carried with them through the desert, was a copy and a shadow of what is in heaven. And we find that God instructed the Israelites to make this representation, a physical model, if you will, of His throne for the tabernacle they would carry with them in the wilderness. And at either side of this mercy seat, which represented God's throne, was a golden cherub, and its wings extended and covered the mercy seat. And these two cherubim, fashioned out of gold, represented real angelic beings. These great super angels whose wings covered God's throne. And this being God addresses here in Ezekiel is called the cherub who covers, indicating that once he had been one of the great angels depicted in this model of God's throne. God gave these angels this awesome distinction of serving and covering the very throne of God. And on down in verse 14, "You were on the holy mountain of God. You walked back and forth in the midst of fiery stones." And a lot of times in the Bible, hills and mountains are often used to symbolize governments. So it's apparent that possibly this super angel administered and even assisted in the governance of the angels, who numbered in multiple millions. So we see from these verses here in Ezekiel chapter 28, that this being that became known as Satan was something very special and very powerful, created as a beautiful, magnificent being and given some very awesome responsibilities. Perfect in all your ways. Seal of perfection, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty, and covering the very throne of God. Well, how much closer could he get, being with God, covering the throne of God? So what happened to this being? Seems like he had it all. So what happened? Let's look in verse 15. The last half of verse 15. "Till iniquity was found in you." God also said here, "You were perfect in your ways from the day you were created, till iniquity was found in you." Iniquity was found in his heart. And the Hebrew word for iniquity here is translated evil, or perverseness, unrighteousness, or wickedness. No, evil was found in his heart. The same mindset can happen to us if we're not careful. This same iniquity can enter into our hearts if we're not careful. You know, this being was extraordinary, perfect, until he sinned. And in verse 16, by the abundance of your trading, you became filled with violence within, and you sinned. Therefore I cast you as a profane thing out of the mountain of God, and I destroyed you, O covering cherub, from the midst of the fiery stones. You know, the desired results that this being had were flawed and they were not realized. Now, he wanted to be like God. He wanted to rule the universe. But instead, he was thrown out of heaven and thrown out of the very family of God. Let's turn back to Isaiah chapter 14. We'll see a little bit more about this rebellion and this fall. It's a little more insight as to what occurred with this super angel, you know, that was covering the very throne of God. You know, we see what can happen when iniquity or when evil enters into an individual's hearts. And we see what happened to this magnificent cherub, you know, created in magnificent splendor and covering the very throne of God. You know, right there at God's throne. But that wasn't enough. He wanted to challenge God for the control of the universe. And in Isaiah 14 and verse 12, it says, "How are you are fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How you are cut down to the ground, you who weaken the nations." Now, the tone here seems to be one of sorrow. You know, as you read that, "O Lucifer, son of the morning." You know, the tone is one of sorrow, and it's almost like, you know, what's going on? Look what happened to you. You know, you had it made. You know, and almost with a sense of urgency and disbelief and asking the question, you know, what's wrong with you? You know, what happened to you? Why'd you do this? And verse 13, "For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit on the mount of the congregation on the farthest sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds, and I will be like the Most High." You know, the iniquity of the heart. You know, this evil and this wickedness starts to talk. You know, I want more. I'm not satisfied with what I have. You know, I'm not satisfied with covering the very throne of God. I want the throne. I want to sit on the throne. You know, this job's not good enough for me. I want something better. I deserve better, and I can do better. You know, I don't want to cover this throne, as I mentioned. You know, I want to actually sit on the throne. You know, what had been an amazingly beautiful, an immensely talented spirit being, you know, with great responsibility, you know, in God's angelic order, became, through this rebellion, you know, reprehensible, despicable creature. You know, he became Satan, and he became our adversary, the slanderer, the accuser, and the destroyer. You know, he became the devil, the enemy of all humanity. You know, the immense powers that he had to use in the service to God, you know, now they've turned not to serve God, but to try to thwart God's purpose. You know, this creature remains an enormously powerful spirit being. You know, but not his powers, but now his powers, instead of serving God and doing good, are used for wicked and destructive ends, and used for evil. So this bright and beautiful being that we've read about has now turned dark and ugly. So let's look at a few encounters with Satan in the Bible. And we can read about several instances in which he influenced people. The first one we'll start with is Adam and Eve. Now, this is the first mention that we get of Satan in the Bible. Turn back to Genesis chapter 3. You know, he didn't waste any time before trying to interfere with this relationship that God wanted with the human beings. You know, here he is on the scene shortly after God created Adam and Eve. Genesis chapter 3 and verse 1. Now the serpent was more cunning. That's one of the characteristics we mentioned a while ago. Cunning. Than any other beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, has God indeed said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? And the first thing he's trying to do here is destroy this relationship that God wanted and had with the first humans. You know, and he kind of subtly asks Eve, you know, there's that characteristic of being subtle again. You know, as God indeed said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden. But he cleverly avoided mentioning to her all that God had given them and all that God had provided them with. You know, all the other things in the garden that they could partake of. Instead, he succeeded in getting her to concentrate on the one thing that God told them not to partake of. He redirected her focus to this forbidden fruit. And the woman said to the serpent, we may eat the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die. And the serpent said to the woman, you will not surely die. You know, he slyly began to deceive her. You know, introducing the first lie here. Telling her that she would not die if she partook of this forbidden fruit. In verse 5, for God knows that in the day you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. You know, he followed again here with another untruth. You know, he slandered God by accusing God of holding back on Adam and Eve and withholding valuable knowledge from them. And then she was seduced here by his persuasiveness. You know, she took of the fruit and then she shared it with Adam. And then we know the rest of the story after that. So we see several characteristics here that Satan used. You know, he's got some of those same characteristics and some of those same weapons that he's bringing to us, plus a whole lot more. Let's look at another instance in Job. And we're all very familiar with this and what Job went through as well. But in Job chapter 1, when verse 1 describes Job, tells us about him. You know, he was blameless and upright and one who feared God and shunned evil. And then we get on over into verse 8. And the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil? So Satan answered and said, does Job fear God for nothing? So it's like, you know, he's obeying you and doing what you want because you're doing something for him. Have you not made a hedge around him, around the household, and around all that he has on every side? You have blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. But stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face. And so then the Lord says to Satan, behold, all that he has is in your power. You only do not lay a hand on his person. And then Satan went out. You know, and we read on in the next verses, you know, what happened? You know, Job had a lot of possessions. You know, he lost those, his animals and his children. You know, he lost all of that. And then down in chapter 2, you know, in verse 3, they have the conversation again. You know, have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, blameless and upright, who fears God and shuns evil? And still he holds fast to his integrity. Although you incited me against him to destroy him without cause. So Job endured some pretty terrible things, you know, but he held fast. He didn't curse God. So Satan answered and said, skin for skin, yes, all that a man has, he will give for his own life. But stretch out your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will surely curse you. You know, so we know that God allowed Satan to reach out and touch him. You know, and he experienced some very painful boils. And as you go on and read the rest of the story, I mean, he went through some very, very excruciating events. You know, but Job held fast. And if you turn over to the end of Job, chapter 42, you know, and through all of this, you know, Job did not give in to what Satan was desiring and curse God. In Job chapter 42, in verse 12, now the Lord blessed the latter days of Job more than the beginning. And then it tells, you know, he had 14,000 sheep, 6,000 camels, 1,000 yoke of oxen, and 1,000 female donkeys. You back up to verse 10, it tells us that, you know, God gave Job twice as much as he had before. You know, he went through some pretty terrible things. You know, Satan made an attack on him, but Job held fast, endured that, and then God blessed Job more than he had before. So Satan is coming for us as well. He's using some of these same types of weapons to come after us. Let's look briefly then at, you know, the faces of Satan. And I suggested to my wife that I get one of these Halloween costumes of Satan and put it on and come up here, but we both agreed that that would not be in very good taste, especially with our young children. But that being said, if you could meet the devil face to face, you know, what would he look like? You know, if you ask people in the world, you know, give a description of what you think he looks like. You know, he's commonly depicted as this character that has the red suit with a pitchfork and a hideous looking ghoul, you know, some terrible looking thing. You know, but these are probably very, very far from the truth. Now, where does this misrepresentation come from? I'll give you a brief mythology lesson. There was a god in Greek mythology called Pan, P-A-N. And this was the god of shepherds, of flocks, wild things, hunting and rustic. But this god had the hindquarters, legs, and horns of a goat. You know, he's recognized as the god of the fields. And then Pan's image, this god Pan's image, lived on through medieval depictions of Satan. And the devil was often shown to have the horns and lower body of a goat. You know, and a common superstition in the Middle Ages was that goats whispered lewd sentences into the ears of the saints. You know, this belief may have probably come from the behavior of the buck and rut, you know, which was the very epitome of lust. So we see this image comes, you know, down through time. You know, people misrepresented it. They've You know, they construed it many different ways. And in doing a search on this, you know, you bring up all kinds of things on the internet if you do that. You know, even found out that there's, you know, a Satan Bible, there's a Satan church. You know, lots of stuff dealing with Satanism and Satan worship out there. You know, people have really stepped over to the dark side. But this is a misrepresentation of what Satan would look like. You know, and in reality, if we were to meet the devil or meet Satan, we probably would find him very attractive and very engaging and very persuasive. You know, though he is really the prince of darkness, you know, he tries to present himself as an angel of light. You know, we've seen how he was created, you know, very beautiful and this super angel. And Satan is a master of misrepresentation. And he's the world's greatest advertiser. He packages his product so that it is attractive and appealing on the outside, and yet it conceals the reality that's on the inside. You know, and that's deadly poison. You know, he wants people to see him as good, beneficent, and trustworthy. You know, he wants the product that he's peddling, which is sin and rejecting God, to appear enticing and inviting. You know, and he is very successful, as we all can see that in our society. There was a letter that, or an essay if you want, entitled, "If I Were the Devil." And it's supposedly written by Paul Harvey back in the early 90s, but it basically goes through and describes a lot of what we're seeing today in society. You know, everything that is good is usually thrown out or looked at as being taboo. You know, we see that, you know, throwing God out of schools, throwing the commandments out of schools, praying out of schools. You know, and everything that's perverse and bad, they're letting it come in. You know, so it's total shift, you know, in morals and in values. You know, we're going from, as we mentioned, the wholesome values that God has to the perverse values of Satan. You know, and so Satan is very successful in selling his product. You know, he never wants to present sin as it really is. You know, and we don't get both sides of the story either. You know, he presents only what he wants people to see. You know, something that appears fun and exciting. You know, he wants us and he wants mankind to focus on the pleasure, on what feels good or what looks good at the moment. You know, any long-term consequences are going to be the last things he wants to be on our mind. You know, when he entices us to sin. And we are at war with Satan. And we are at war. He is our adversary. And he's coming for us. We're wanted individuals. You picture it, if Satan's got a book of wanted posters or the most wanted, he's got our picture on one. You know, Satan is coming for us. You know, he's dangerous and he's ruthless and he's prepared to get us and he's motivated by anger. Turn to 1 Peter chapter 5. Some verses that we're all very familiar with. First Peter chapter 5 and verse 8. We're warned to be sober and be vigilant. Because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. I brought this up before, but if you've ever seen any of these, the footage where these animals are hunting, you know, in these National Geographic type movies, if you've ever seen the lions going after their prey, you know, they're not going about it lightly. I mean, that's serious business. When they go after the prey, they're going to devour it. You know, they tear in and rip it to shreds. You know, no sympathy, no holds barred. And when Satan is out there like a roaring lion, coming for us, He's coming to get us. He's out to get us. And again, you know, we are wanted by Him. And as the end draws near, you know, He's going to step up His attack. And it's going to become much more intense. You know, He's going to realize that His time is running out. You know, if I'm going to get these people, if I'm going to derail their attempts at being in God's kingdom, you know, my time's running out. I'm going to step up the attack. To successfully fight this attack, you know, we must know this enemy. Be mindful of Satan's devices, you know, lest he take advantage of us. You know, as we mentioned, Satan transforms himself into an angel of light. He wants to package what he's got, you know, as being something that is good and worthwhile, when actually on the inside, the hidden dangers, you know, are not revealed. You know, and Satan will try and hinder us, try to do whatever he can to trip us up. Let's turn to Revelation chapter 2. In Revelation chapter 2, in verse 10, you know, this is the message to the persecuted church. In verse 10, do not fear any of those things which you are about to suffer. You know, indeed, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison that you may be tested, and you will have tribulation 10 days. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. You know, Satan will come for us, you know, and he will harm some of us. You know, he will harm, possibly even kill some. We may be tested to extremes. I mean, we look at what Job went through. That was some pretty bad stuff, but I would be willing to almost speculate that what Job went through could probably pale in comparison to what Satan could probably dish out today. I mean, there could be some really tough stuff to go through. You know, we may be tested to extremes. You know, and if we are faithful, as it says here, even unto death, God promises that He will give us the crown of life. So, Satan is coming after us. So how does he make those attempts at us and the world? You don't have to turn there, but in Matthew chapter 13, verse 15, reference is made to the heart of the people growing dull, their ears are hard of hearing, and their eyes are closed. And why is this? Now, who's responsible? You know, we know who's responsible for this. You know, in 2 Corinthians 4, verse 4, you know, Satan is the god of this world, and he has blinded the eyes of this world. Turn to 1 John chapter 5. The heart of the people is growing dull, their ears are hard of hearing, and their eyes are closed. And Satan has blinded the world. 1 John 5, and in verse 19, you know, we know that we are of God, and the whole world lies under the sway of the wicked one. You know, the whole world lies under the sway of Satan, under the wicked one. You know, Satan can't make us sin, but he does influence us through our fleshly weaknesses. You know, he will use those fleshly weaknesses to try and trick us, try and manipulate us. He wants to steer us away from God's way and away from that relationship that God has for us. And Satan will attack our heart. You know, he will try to appeal to our self-deception, our natural deviousness. And we read in Jeremiah chapter 17 and verse 9, that the heart is deceitful above all things, who is desperately wicked. And Satan will use any means that he can to get to us. And we may even start looking for ways to justify our own desires or what we think is the right way to go. Turn back to Proverbs chapter 16. If we fall into this trap, you know, of trying to justify our own possibly sinful desires, what we think is right, Proverbs 16 and verse 25 says that there is a way that seems right to a man. It may be what we think is the right way or what mankind thinks is the right way. You know, it looks good at the moment, feels good at the moment. But its end is the way of death. The results of our own attempts, mankind's own attempts in this situation, what we think is right, can be catastrophic, very catastrophic to us. You know, Satan tries to take advantage of our weak and greedy nature sometimes. He tries to persuade us to rely more and more on our own emotions than what we normally would. You know, he wants us to do what feels good now, you know, have a good time, and not to worry about tomorrow. Don't worry about the consequences. You know, if it feels good, do it. You know, give in to these desires of the flesh. You know, Satan is very powerful, very intelligent, very cunning, and he will stop at nothing to carry out his attempts to foil this plan that God has of having a relationship with us and making us a part of His family. You know, Satan's goal is to separate mankind from God. So how do we defeat Satan? And we've looked at a little background on Satan. You know, he had it all, but his iniquity in his heart turned him against God. He has some very powerful weapons that he's bringing after us. And we know that he is coming after us. You know, there's not a question of that. You know, we are wanted individuals in Satan's eyes. But James chapter 4 gives us a little bit of insight on how we might defeat Satan. James chapter 4 and verse 7. Therefore, submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Lament and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and He will lift you up. You know, God will help us. You know, this is our secret weapon, if you will, which is no secret about it. You know, through God and with God's help, you know, we're told that we can defeat Satan. Turn back to Psalm chapter 91. Psalm chapter 91 and verse 11. For he shall give his angels charge over you to keep you in all your ways. Now there is safety for us if we abide in the presence of God. And he will give his angels charge over you to keep you in all your ways. So if we stay in the presence of God, stay close to God, you know, we have a better chance at overcoming Satan. And the more our character becomes like God's perfect nature, you know, the less Satan is going to feel comfortable in our presence. going to make Him uncomfortable. And He will be more inclined to flee from us. So as a deceiver, Satan has no equal. In addition to being the world's greatest con artist, you know, he is also the world's most accomplished counterfeiter. You know, that a lot of what he has out there today is in an attempt to counterfeit what God has. And the sad part about it is that many people in the world are taking the counterfeit instead of the real deal. But from the beginning, God has had a magnificent plan for humans. That's to give us His gift of eternal life. Now, God promises us, Revelation chapter 21 and verse 7, you don't have to turn there, but He who overcomes shall inherit all things. Now, and this would include he who overcomes, you know, the attacks of Satan, remains faithful to the end. He who overcomes all of these things, I will be his God, and he shall be my son. You know, Satan wants to thwart this plan that God has. You know, he wants to prevent you and I from developing the close relationship with God that we desperately need. He wants to keep us from attaining our destiny. He wants to keep us from reaching our goal, from receiving our gift that God has promised if we overcome. Satan wants to keep us from receiving our crown of life. You know, he will stop at nothing. You know, and it's going to likely get pretty intense before it's over. You know, Satan is going to let us have it with both barrels, if you will. So the first mention of Satan in the Bible has him immediately at work using his powerful tools to try to break up this relationship that God wants with mankind. That's his primary goal. Satan's primary goal is to foil this relationship, to keep us out of the kingdom of God. And all through the Bible, we see how Satan works and what some of his tools are. And he's got some good tools. But let's not forget also about the last mention of Satan in the Bible, toward the end of Revelation. And we know that Satan will be put away. He will be banished. We can win our fight against Satan. And God will help us win that fight if we rely on His strength and if we stay close to Him. If we remain faithful, even unto death, if necessary, you know, God promised that He will give us the crown of life. And that represents our victory over Satan. You know, we don't have to be blinded by the darkness because we can walk in the light.